All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Asham, take two. Mark.
Set up.
Set.
And action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn. What's up?
What's up?
I'm bursting in flames today, David.
It's so hot out.
I can't handle this.
That, but it's not like relatively as hot as it's going to get. It's just sweaty out and gross.
I switch very quickly from complaining about the cold to complaining about the heat.
I don't know if I stopped complaining about the heat.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand how you run and do things that make you hot.
Well, here's the thing. I have a very specific, because I get asked that a lot, because I'm a real indoorsman. I don't like being outdoors because I don't like sweating. But my answer to that is I don't mind sweating if I'm sweating on purpose.
Mm.
Like if I'm in my, you know, running clothes and I'm in my, you know, out there running on purpose, you know, then it's fine. It doesn't bother me the slightest. But when I'm wearing my normal street clothes and I walk out the door and all of a sudden I'm pitting out, like I'm miserable.
Oh yeah, you look like me today with spots all over the shirt. Yeah, it's no good. Well, okay.
Got a lot of news.
We got a lot of news.
Yeah.
I know last week you were pretty psyched about King Shark.
Well, I just think it's great that Michael Rooker is listening to the podcast and felt the need to correct us.
Yeah, he's not going to be King Shark. He denies the rumors. Although I don't think he denies being in the movie.
Ah.
Just being King Shark.
That image that we posted of King Shark is... Is that King Shark on the shitter?
I think he's in prison.
On the hopper?
But he could easily... I mean, you don't see.
It looked like he was on the hopper.
He's reading the book. Yeah.
All right. So we'll have to stay tuned to the ever comical and never ending parade of who's doing what in Suicide Squad.
But more importantly,
yes, please.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is getting a reboot or maybe a sequel.
Thank God. Finally.
I mean, I feel like they never made enough of these movies. It's finally time to bring it back. My question to you is there a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids franchise without Rick Moranis?
Yeah.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I wasn't even sure there was like a film industry without Rick Moranis.
I don't mean that in any way disrespectful to Mr. Moranis, but I'm just saying, like, to me, this movie is so, like, it is what it is. It's fluff. It's, you know, filler. It's popcorn. It's candy. It's, you know, cotton candy.
Yeah.
Like, so who cares? Like, let's not take it too seriously. And you never know, maybe it'll be really funny.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it'll turn out to be really, you know, great. Or maybe it'll just be a filler one week that they put out a kid's movie in March and they're killing time until the next Disney movie comes out.
Here's my question to you. Right. Hypothetically, who replaces Rick Moranis?
Oh.
And the clearest one feels like Jack Black. So scratch him off, other than him.
All right. Well, first of all, just for the record,
whoa.
I don't like Jack Black.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Things got serious.
I would like to the record to show. I have a good answer to this.
Okay.
He would never, ever do it.
Yeah.
But Paul Rudd would be perfect for this.
He would, though.
He would.
Because he's that, like, lovable kind of dad type figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could totally see that. All right.
Yeah, I think Paul Rudd would be perfect for this. I think the casting for who's the lead dad, maybe it'll be the lead mom.
As Paul Rudd? Or maybe the mom's a professor.
Like who, like how about like Tina Fey as like the lead mom? Tina Fey and Paul Rudd are the co-stars of the new Honey, I Shrunk the Kids reboot.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, podcast at penncinema.com.
Wow, because it's really about the kids.
Oh, my God. Imagine if we get it right. Imagine if that turns out to be right.
We won all the awards.
I just blew my own mind.
The next award ceremony.
All right. Now, this is kind of a downer, this piece right here.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Danny Craig, Down and Out.
Now, is this official? Because this is like, I heard this.
Right.
And then some places are like, maybe it's not true. What do we know?
Well, we don't know anything.
Okay.
But I just want to say, right, as per usual, I just want to say this to me gets added to the list of things that have me concerned about the new Bond movie.
25.
Like, there's never, there's one either delay or bad news or rewrite or whatever after another on this title. And I kind of want to, like, I want to see a headline that's like, you know, Bond 25 wrapped production on its first month and the cast is super psyched to be there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like some exciting sort of reaffirming piece of news rather than the continual drip of, you know, sort of bad news.
I'm with you on that. I mean, on one hand, it's like actors get hurt all the time. So I wonder if they're just.
Yeah.
Just trying to come up with some sort of news.
To keep him in the news.
Yeah.
That could be.
So, but at the same time, I'm with you. I have my doubts about this one.
Yeah.
There's just so many things that seem to be consistently going wrong.
Yeah. I want it to be good. I want it so bad.
Well, you know, someone who never has consistent bad news around his name.
Oh, God, I hope it's M. Night.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan-a-ding-dong.
Shyamalan-a-ding-dong. Revealed he's working on a new film with a fun, quote-unquote, fun sci-fi bent.
Okay.
I mean, sure. He hasn't hit it out of the park lately, but he also hasn't totally missed, I don't think. Well, I don't know. People didn't seem to. Glass was kind of mixed.
Was it? I thought
from
it was,
what I heard. I didn't actually see it, so I don't know.
I saw it. I thought it was great. I loved it. I felt like, and now reading, I think this headline is good news. The reason why I say that is because I feel like finishing Glass was almost like unfinished business for him. Okay. I feel like he had to check that box so that he could move on. He sort of wrapped that up, and maybe there's going to be another Glass 2, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like he wrapped that up, checked that box. Now he can move on. I love the fact, at first I was like, what? But I love the fact that he used the word fun. Like, he's going out of his way to let you know, like, he's loose, he's taking it easy, he's chillaxing, maxing and relaxing and shooting some b-ball outside of the school.
Wow.
And a couple of guys, they were up to no good.
Starting to cause trouble in the neighborhood.
I mean, M. Night is from West Philadelphia, born and raised. So I'm just saying, like, he's cutting loose a little bit, and I
what if you just stumbled on the movie?
Oh, my God.
The Fresh Prince of the movie.
That would be the
two things.
Oh my God, that would make me so happy. What's the expression? Even a blind squirrel sometimes finds a nut.
I would be really excited for that.
Yeah, I don't. There's no way that this guy could ever make a straight up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's going to make something that's sort of, here's the message that I take away from it that I like. He's not going to try to take himself too seriously. You know what I mean? He's not going to, like, try to produce some, you know, epic.
He's not going to take himself too seriously. Every role he's ever played in all of his films has always been him taking himself way too seriously.
Yeah.
Lady in the Water, when he was like the mystic or whatever in the Sorry.
Lady in the Water was one of, I think it was the last movie that I ever paid money to see before Penn Cinema opened.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure. I remember seeing it at Regal. I played hooky from work and caught a matinee. And I remember when it was over, I looked over to the guy that was sitting next to me and I was like, what was that? What just happened?
Such a weird one.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of weird ones, here's a name that I'm going to try and get right.
You don't stand a chance. I know.
Taika Waititi. There's too many eyes and too many. Taika.
I think you got the first part right. I want to hear you take on the second part again.
Waititi. Waititi.
Waititi.
Taika Waititi from Thor Ragnarok.
My eighth grade self is doing everything he possibly can to keep it together. No. I can't hold on. I'm losing it. And we're out. Okay, so Taiki is producing Akira, or I'm sorry, the production begins on Akira.
Live action Akira this July.
Walk me through this. What is that?
Akira is an anime that everyone loves but me. And it's a very 80s anime about, I don't even remember.
Okay.
I just remember that they named Tetsuya. They scream their names and some city blows up. And the animation, I think I didn't like it because the animation comes across as really gross to me. Just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me because he's very comical in a lot of the things that I know him from. So I'm wondering how he'll make this his brand of thing, if he'll even try. But it'll be interesting to see if anybody wants to watch it.
When you say gross, do you mean gory?
No, so like there's like a guy who gets merges with technology. I think he merges with technology or something.
Okay.
And becomes like this like big blob of a person.
Yeah.
With like technology all over, like flesh and technology. Yeah. And it just like, it's not gory. It's just the fleshy kind of like imagery is just very gross to me. I don't know how else to explain it. And I never really liked the imagery that it did. So I'm not like jonesing for this movie whatsoever. I think it's interesting that they're actually doing it because it's a very ambitious, very hard thing to do. Because the people who love this movie, like they love this movie. Like they say people loved Akira, but they're not Akira, Alita, but I mean, who are they? I don't know.
I didn't meet them.
I know, but I feel like people love Akira.
Yeah.
So.
All right. This is possibly the most controversial.
There's
no way. So we're talking about the new name that was announced to replace Ben Affleck as Batman.
Right.
And there's no way that that name can be released. I think the only way that name could be released without controversy, as Jimmy Fallon would say, the only way that that name gets released without controversy is if it's a young, unknown, or slightly known, you know what I mean, a sort of somebody who's, you know, new to the world stage. Maybe
right.
Not, you're never going to take a complete rookie, but, you know, somebody who's sort of, this is their breakthrough film. So they recently announced Robert Pattinson from Twilight fame, right?
Mm-hmm.
As the new Batman. I mean, he's taken a lot of heat for it. People don't seem to be psyched about it, but should we just give him a chance?
Well, here's the thing. Is it a vampire Batman?
Because if it's a vampire Batman, then he's the guy.
He's the guy. Well, okay. My initial reaction was negative. Because all the photos I know of him are him looking really dopey and pale and vampire stuff.
Toothy.
Right. Then I remembered he was pretty good in Harry Potter, the fourth one. And he's been kind of killing it lately, film-wise, like with his roles. Like I saw images of him, and he looks... I don't know. He looks like he's killing it. So
yeah.
I'm kind of like, I'm cool with this. And then here's a weird thing that hit me. Is I thought, is he too young to play Batman? Because like I kind of want the Batman that could potentially have Robin or maybe like more of the Bat family or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, is he too young? And then I realized, is it that he's too young or is that he's too close to my age?
Yeah.
And I'm no longer young.
Oh, man.
That was a thought.
Whoa, that was an ugly thought.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, let's not go there any
That's
further.
A scary one. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I hear you, because he's not that young.
Right. I'm pretty sure it's the second one.
Right. He, I'm totally open-minded to this, and I kind of agree with your assessment. And my thing is, like, I mean, I'm not going to think of, like, a good example off the top of my head, but we have a lot of great actors who have really killed it in good A-list roles. Sandra Bullock would be a great example mm-hmm. of someone who has done some amazing work and has some very embarrassing titles,
right.
you know, in her catalog there, you know.
Her catalog?
Her catalog. Yeah. You know, so I think that's, you know, it goes back to kind of what we said about George Clooney about, you know, nobody thinks of him as being from ER, you know,
right.
but at some point he was making ER, you mm-hmm. know, and if you fast forward and, you know, talk about him being in Ocean's, you know, Ocean's 11. You don't know if that would be good or bad, but in my opinion, it was great. So I don't know. My thing with Mr. Pattinson here is like, let's give him a chance. We love Batman.
Mm-hmm.
We want Batman to be successful. It's kind of part of me had the reaction to this of like, I feel like people just want to bash whoever just because that's what they do now.
Right.
You know, it's with this particular title with Batman franchise. Like, why do we have to kill, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but it's kind of like eating your young, you know what I mean? Like, why can't we cheer? Why can't we be positive?
Right.
But
I, of all the heroes too, I feel like Batman switches faces the most
mm.
and we should be, I was thinking about this. I was like, I almost yearned for the time where like Batman was almost different every film. You know,
like totally different.
Yeah, like yeah. It was, you know, the Schumacher films weren't—they're not good, but the fact that
they're not what you would call good.
But every movie was a different, like a different Batman. You were just like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
whatever, and he just accepted it. I mean, I don't necessarily want that kind of constant rotation with everything, but
right.
I don't know.
I would like to see a this. What I'm going to say is a cliche, but like if you take it at face value. I would like to see them, like, a totally fresh look at Batman. Mm. Like, start from scratch.
Origin story?
No, I mean, okay, whatever.
I don't want another origin
story. Maybe it's an origin story, maybe it's not, whatever. But I feel like the Batman that we have now is a variation on, I mean, we've talked about this before. The definitive Batman is the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And the Batman that we have now is, in my opinion, a variation of that. It's not a completely different, you know, look. It's not a completely different reimagining. You know, it's just sort of tweak this, tweak that, you know,
yeah.
pull this, pull that, and whatever. And next thing you know, you have this sort of slightly different, not as good Batman. I'm saying it would be interesting to me to sort of start all over again and you know, how does it end up?
I would have loved, and I think I mentioned this on an earlier episode too, if this would have been a Batman Beyond scenario where you could have kept, well, I know he doesn't want to do it anymore, but you could have kept what's his name around as old Batman.
Right.
And Batman Beyond is like Batman no longer being Batman for a long time. He's been retired. And this kid kind of like finds the Batcave. And he's got kind of like an Iron Man suitish type
yeah,
thing that
yeah.
he was developing. And he
yeah.
gives it to the kid. And then the old Batman is just back in the cave, like, guiding him.
That'd be cool.
I think that would
yeah.
be really cool.
That's what I'm talking about. Something totally fresh. Something,
yeah.
you know, almost similar to what they've been doing with Spider-Man.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
It'd be very similar to
yep.
Tony Stark and Spider-Man.
I'd like a black Batman.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
You know, like,
yeah.
and I would say that for a lot of superheroes. You know, I wouldn't
yeah.
mind. I think that would be a good way to step forward.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I got three pieces of news.
Oh, hit me hard.
They're all three related.
Okay.
But I'll read them as individual pieces of news.
Okay.
Okay. I was at a trade show, a movie conference this week,
mm.
and I had the pleasure of meeting a guy from Amazon Studios.
Jeff Bezos?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was 200 movie theater hacks at a cheap casino in suburban Maryland, and Jeff Bezos was there.
Yeah, he was like, yeah.
Naturally.
And then he was like, you do a podcast with this guy that was in the Amazon Prime offices once.
Right.
We need to talk about that.
Right. So, no, I was at this conference, and there was some hack rep from Amazon Studios, but he was big enough that he, you know, whatever. He was legit. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
He was not – I'm not trying to say he was a big shot, but I'm just saying he was like a legit studio dude from Amazon. And he was there to present the screening of Late Night. And before he presented it, he ran what they call a sizzle reel, which, you know, was a bunch of trailers from movies that are either in production or are finished but not on the schedule, that type of thing. And it was really interesting to me. He – you know when you hear people who are in – who talk in public, like that's their job. Like every day they're like representing something, a marketer or a salesman or something along those lines. His theme, that he probably spoke for, let's just say, 10 minutes prior to the movies, prior to the trailers and stuff. And in that 10 minutes, at least five times, he said one of two things. He either made reference – he said Amazon is committed to the theatrical experience, or he said the same thing – opposite, which is Netflix is not. And he did not use the word Netflix, but he made references to some streaming companies, you know, that are trying to pass themselves off as studios, do not share our commitment to the theatrical window. Do not share our passion for the theatrical experience. We're making movies to be seen in movie theaters. So I just thought I made like a little mental note, like, okay, this guy's not gone rogue. He's not. It was obvious from the way he was talking that he's been given this speech 100 times in the last 30 days, and it's just interesting to me that Amazon, to the public, Amazon is Amazon,
right?
But in the movie business, it's clear that they're making a big push to be taken seriously as a production house, you know, as a regular movie studio, which, you know, given my, you know, position, I think that's good.
No, that's cool.
I think more people should do that way. Speaking of people who are not going that way, a man who I love to hate, Kevin Costner, has a Western, and he's making it for Netflix.
Oh.
Or at least that's what he hinted in this interview. He gave an interview about making a movie for about the like a Western, some kind of Western.
Sandworld.
Right. And I thought it was one of the stupidest interviews I've read in a long time, because his big defense of Netflix was that when you make a movie for Netflix, you don't have to go through the MPAA. You don't have to get a rating. What's the big problem with getting a rating? So he made the case that if we're making a movie, we're going to let the movie speak for itself and not let some committee speak for the movie. What?
Does the MPAA really change movies that drastically?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure. I know that that's a thing. I know that movies have gone into the MPAA wanting a PG-13 so that it can reach a wider audience, and either living with an R rating or going back and cutting, you know, 3 F-words and a decapitation to try to make it a PG-13. And obviously directors would find that rightly so, but at the same time, like, what are you doing? Are you trying to make a blockbuster? In which case you need to be ready to compromise a little bit to get that PG-13.
Right.
Or are you good enough that you can make a blockbuster that's rated R? I mean, there's lots of R-rated blockbusters out there.
For sure.
You know, and if you're not confident enough that you can get past that R rating, then maybe you suck.
Maybe nobody wants to see Westerns anymore.
Right. Yeah. So Kevin Costner is out there, and I'm not sure how this is going to end up, but he's out there talking about his Western and talking about how Netflix reaches more people.
Oh.
Which, whatever. Okay. My third piece of news.
Okay.
I'm not the only one that thinks Kevin Costner sucks.
Okay.
You've heard of this Cannes International Film Festival.
Yeah.
Is it Cannes or Cannes?
I always heard of it as Cannes.
Cannes. Cannes International Film Festival.
Yeah.
Has not allowed Netflix. They've the phrase that I heard was sidelined Netflix from their festival.
Now, this is big because was it last week or the week before we had a trailer and I was like, does this count? Because it's at, I guess maybe it was at Sundance.
Right.
And I was like, it's at the big festival, so does it count for our movie trailer talk time?
Right.
And you were like, well, it's only going to home video. So, I mean, we still talked about it, but I mean, if these film festivals start pushing back.
Yeah.
That's when I think it's going to start to get a little bit more real.
As because, they should.
Yeah. At some point they're like, oh, we weren't in the theater, but we won all these awards. You know, it's right. Like they're not going to be able to say that anymore.
Right. We were talking, I just had the name of the movie on the tip of my tongue, but we were talking about it. And I was saying I was looking forward to seeing it, and I'll watch it on TV at home. Mm-hmm. You know, and I got no problem with – there have been some great movies that are released home. You know, and that's fine. But don't try to pass them off as a movie. It's a TV movie.
Right.
A movie movie gets released in movie theaters.
Like the Sherlock movies or show or whatever you want to call it. They're basically movies.
Right.
And they're great for home. They're not like draw you into the theater type things.
Well, I mean, a great example is Game of Thrones. I mean, that's an incredible work of art.
Right.
It's a masterpiece, really,
in
my opinion. But nobody's nominating it for, you know, an Oscar, right? Because we all watched it at home in our living room.
Yeah.
You know, and let's not try to pass it off as something it's not. So Amazon is committing to the theatrical push. Netflix is not. And Cannes Film Festival is committing to the theatrical push. And Kevin Costner is not.
He is not.
So just for those folks at home that are keeping score... It's Amazon and Cannes that are the good guys and Kevin Costner and Netflix that are the bad guys. Hand out your white hats and black hats accordingly. Yeah,
action figures coming soon.
Right.
Let's move ourselves into trailers for this week. Maleficent 2. Is coming out. Have you seen the first one?
Yeah.
I have not seen the first one.
It's good.
I kind of want to watch it more now because this trailer for the second one looks really good. And I don't know how to say this. I'm watching this trailer, and I'm like, man, Disney bought Marvel. They bought Lucasfilms. They bought Fox. And it's like, are they kind of losing their family-friendly, all-the-time appeal? Because this, I mean, doesn't look like bad, like, but it looks a little bit more...
Dark
than I would have expected a Disney straight up branded thing to look.
So, yeah.
It does look good though.
Did you catch the song in the background?
I did. Season of the Witch.
Oh man, that's such a great song. Google Season of the Witch and listen to it in the original form. And I don't know if you'll be able to. I didn't try to find the sort of reversion that they have playing with this trailer, but. I think this trailer is an example of beautiful. Remember how excited I was with Avengers? I commented on the use of Dear Mr. Fantasy at the beginning of that. Mm-hmm. And to me, this song selection, now in Avengers, they just played the original straight up Dear Mr. Fantasy. This is you almost don't recognize this song. But I agree with you. The trailer is dark and the use of that song. I'm psyched for this movie. Mm. I really want to see this movie.
So now riddle me this. The first one is not Cinderella, right?
Right.
First one is about her origin.
I believe so.
And this one looks like it's about Cinderella from her point of view.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm interested. Okay, so the next one we have is The Dead Don't Die. Had a Red Band trailer come out this week. It didn't feel like it was. It didn't feel new to me, but it feels like more of the same of what I want to see type stuff.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. No, I guess I'm not as much of a trailer aficionado as you are, so I don't. I'm not really ready to critique the trailer. I felt like I almost felt like it was a preview. Like, I still don't really understand what the plot is, except that Adam Driver and Bill Murray are great together.
They really are great.
You know? And so I think that the trailer sort of continues to show the two of them together. And I think it's like, I can't wait.
Yeah. He's like, how do you kill a zombie? He's like, I don't know. And he, let's try something. Yeah. Slow down. He like leans out the window. He's like, gotta take their heads off.
I love in the, where are they? Like in the hardware, like the sheriff department or something, or the hardware, and the zombie lady at the end, and Adam Driver like whacks her, but then like he can't get the head off. He's like, wait, let me try again. Whacks her again. Like super awkward. I feel like if I was in that movie, that's what would happen to me.
I have some pretty high hopes for this.
Yeah.
Okay. This is it called Aeronaut?
What are you talking about?
Astronaut with Richard Dreyfuss.
Okay, yes, Astronaut. And then there's another movie called Aeronauts.
Okay.
Okay. So you talk about Astronauts and I'll talk about Aeronauts.
Astronauts. Is this a wide release? Did you find this?
I didn't look.
Okay.
Because I thought you were talking about Aeronauts.
Okay. Astronaut is about Richard Dreyfuss, and he's older, and he's got this young kid, and there's this not—he doesn't have a kid. He's friends with this young kid, and there's a contest to send people to space on like the first, well, maybe not the first, but on a commercial space flight to just go up to space. And he's like, "This is the last chance for me to realize my dreams." And he enters the lottery, and he wins. He's going to space, and it looks like there might be difficulty because he was too old, or I don't know. It kind of felt like they spelt the whole movie out. To be honest,
feel like you've seen the movie now.
Yeah, it looked very touching, at the same time kind of boring. So I can't really say I'm super pumped to see this, or that I even really want to see this. It doesn't look bad; it just doesn't look great,
yeah,
or interesting. So tell me about Aeronaut.
The guy, the pretty boy from, it's like Redgrave or something. What's his name? I'm forgetting. He was in Les Mis.
He was in Les Mis?
Yeah. My daughters thought he was hot shit. I think Marley saw Les Mis like 6 times just to watch him.
Just to watch him?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
It's not Redcray or Redgrave or something like that.
Well, the pretty boy.
The pretty boy. Hang on a second. You're going to have to edit this out because I've got to look this up. Okay, so we're Eddie Redmayne. Redmayne.
Right. What are you calling him? Red Dead? Red.
You knew what I meant. The pretty boy.
The pretty boy.
The pretty boy from Les Mis.
Okay. Eddie Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones star in. Wait, David's head just exploded. Something you want to say? Nothing you want to add?
I mean, you could have opened with Felicity Jones.
This is an interesting movie because it's a thriller.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to kind of screw it up for a little bit, but you watch a trailer and tell me if I'm missing something.
Okay.
I feel like the movie is about these two that try to go as high as they can in a hot air balloon. And I think that this is when like air travel was like young and, you know, there was no such thing as airplanes and, you know, zeppelins and anything like that. It was legit just balloons. And I think the movie builds up to the climatic scene where they go as high as they can. And does a hot air balloon explode when they hit the beginnings of outer space? Like I watched a trailer. This was part of Amazon Studios' presentation.
Okay.
And I watched a trailer with them, and when it was over, I kind of was left with the impression that these two, Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, fly up into the beginning of space, like the thin air, and above the clouds, and go higher and higher and higher until the balloon explodes, and then they plummet down to the Earth. But how could you survive? Like, is that did they show us the end of the movie? Like, how could they? Was maybe that was a dream sequence?
But I mean, hot air balloons don't explode, do they?
I don't know. Do they eventually run out of hot air? Is that
hole? There's a hole at the bottom
to let the
air. The pressure would. I'm not a physicist.
Well, here's the interesting thing about this. I watched this trailer with Amazon. You know, we're all hyped up because now we're friends with Amazon.
Right.
And a couple days later after the conference, I get an email from IMAX.
Oh.
about keep this movie on your radar.
Really?
Yeah. So they're trying to, Amazon is, it would be their first IMAX release. Let me back up 1 second, because I feel like I might have set a wrong tone for this. The trailer was really great. Like, I want to see this movie.
Okay.
It looked really good.
Right.
Really exciting, great cast, you know, really well done. It just left me with that weird, like, head-scratching thing. Like, well, if that's the whole premise of the movie, like, what happens?
Right. Well, you'll watch anything with Eddie Redmayne. Redemption.
Pretty Boy.
Yeah, Pretty Boy.
Yeah. So, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta look this up, and I'm really curious.
Aeronauts. Yeah.
Another high flyer. Secret Life of Pets had their final trailer. This movie looks adorable.
Yeah.
I had never seen the first one, but I completely endorse the second one.
Right.
It looks too cute. I'm just like, that's gonna be a solid kids movie,
yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
That's all I really have to say about that.
I got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray.
Back again.
Yeah, we talked to him or talked about him a minute ago.
Did you talk to him?
Right. I was on the phone with him this afternoon. I was like, hey, Bill, what's up? And he was like, do you really know David Moulton?
I gotta know.
Can you get me in to see him? I get that everywhere I go now.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Bill Murray has a weird little movie called Loopers.
Okay.
Which is about caddies. And Bill Murray's one of the more famous non-golfers.
Okay.
From his work in Caddyshack, but also if you follow him at all, you know that he's an avid amateur golfer. And what I learned from watching this trailer was that, you know, as a kid, he was a caddy, you know, at his local golf course. And this movie is a documentary, and it's not a comedy, although it is Bill Murray, so, I mean, it's amusing. But it's absolutely not a comedy. It's a documentary about the history of caddies.
Oh, so it's a documentary.
Huh. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And he narrates it, but a lot of it is interviews with old caddies and new caddies, professional caddies, like, you know, Tiger Woods type of caddies. I don't know. I'm not saying this movie is going to make any national news whatsoever, but I booked it, and we're going to play it.
So I got a question.
Yeah.
What's up with Bill Murray? Did he run out of money?
What are you talking about?
I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about Bill Murray.
Sounds like it.
I'm just saying he dipped out for a long time, and it was like, you want to do this? You want to do that? No, no, no. Now all of a sudden, he's in everything.
What are you talking about, everything?
Well, he's got this. He's got Zombieland. He's got The Dead Don't Die. He's got he recently said he would do Ghostbusters if they asked him to, which he's been like saying he'd never do that.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't know why you got to be harshing on him. What?
I just want to know what's going on.
Why can't the boy work?
I mean,
let a man work.
Let a man work. All right.
You can't keep Bill Murray down.
Okay. I like.
You can't keep him down.
I like the Murray.
I don't believe you do.
I want more of the Murray. I'm getting more of the Murray. I'm curious as to why there was no Murray and now there's all the Murray. It's just, you know. It's one of those life questions. Where's the beef? Where's the Murray?
Where's the beef? All right, here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to take a stab at this.
Okay.
I think when you're – first of all, I don't think Bill Murray was as absent as you believe he was.
Okay.
I think maybe he just wasn't clicking on your radar.
Oh.
That's my guess.
What are you saying about my radar?
Apparently, it's a little off. Secondly, I think that – he's also been busy. Like, have you seen all these clips on YouTube of him, like, randomly showing up to people's...
Yeah, like, just, like, weddings.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I think when you're that rich, and so you don't need money, and you're established, like, the guy is... He's done what he's going to do. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, he's legendary. He's iconic. And that's done. Nobody can ever change that. And I think that at this point in his career... I think if we've learned anything from being a Bill Murray fan, it's that all the guy's interested in is having a good time. Like, all he wants to do, honestly, I can relate to that. Like, all he wants to do is amuse himself, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's brilliant. And if doing some funny Zombieland movies with some talented, you know, cast, like Jesse Eisenberger's no joke, Adam Driver's no joke, and he obviously has a lifelong passion for caddying, like, I think it's clear that he's either doing stuff that he's passionate about, like Loopers, or he's doing stuff that he thinks would be amusing. And he did all those movies with Wes Anderson.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Wes Anderson movies. I totally forgot about those.
Trying to act like Bill Murray was his...
Where's the Murray? I got it now.
Yeah, so that's the deal. That's what I think with Bill Murray.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we got a couple more trailers here.
Okay. Real quick. Neither one of them requires a lot of time, but Tomorrow Man with Jonathan Lithgow.
I met him once. And by met him, I mean I was walking down the streets in New York, and I bumped shoulders, and I did this whole slow turnaround, called my buddy, Emmanuel. That was John Lithgow. So we were basically best friends.
Yeah. He has a movie coming out called Tomorrow Man.
Okay.
I think the movie looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'm seeing it.
Why?
I don't think I have the emotional fortitude.
Okay.
To see. It looks like a real soul-searching tearjerker.
Oh.
It's basically about a man who spends his entire life planning for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Who falls in love with a girl who's like all about living in the moment. And they're both in their like later years. I don't want to put a number to that because I don't think it matters, but they're old. Er. I mean, older than even you.
Me? What? Well, then he could be Batman.
Right. Right. That would be perfect. Okay, so Tomorrow Man opens in Lititz on June 21st. It's a smaller movie. I think it's going to be absolutely beautiful. It looks heartbreaking.
Mm.
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's my summer fair. I think I'm going to be busy with Secret Life of Pets. That's about my level right now.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And then Midsummer trailer number 2. Do you remember us talking about Midsummer?
I do.
The horror movie that takes place, like these American kids like go to this summer festival in like Sweden or Switzerland or Norway or somewhere. And can you imagine how many people I just offended?
Like, our download numbers go way down right, in those countries. Right.
So much for the Nordic vote. So Midsummer, the trailer number 2 is worth looking up because the trailer number 1 was creepy as hell and really scary, but it just sort of sets you up to believe that like this is going to be a really scary movie. Trailer number 2 starts to flesh out some of the plot.
Ooh.
And it looks good.
Okay.
And there's a girl who accidentally ends up on this sort of boys' trip. She gets invited. Most of the boys resent it. And as you and I said earlier, she's either clearly the first one to die or the only one to live.
That's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I need to check that out. As much as I don't want to see this movie, I'm also really curious as to the trailers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, this weekend was, we got some things happening. What was the theater like with the John Wick out and all that kind of stuff?
John Wick.
Or what do they call him in the movie? Jean... the Russian version of his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't say it.
No, we're not even going to try.
You're going to take a hard pass on that one. But he's not the boogeyman. He's the man to call when you need to get the boogeyman.
Right. Yeah. Baba Yaga.
Yeah, Baba Yaga. John Wick was far and away the number 1. We played it in IMAX in Wilmington. Mm. In Huntington Valley and Lititz, we played it regular. It was clearly the number 1. We'll talk about the review in a minute. Some of the other movies sort of just hung around. Avengers, you know, clearly still drawing in the massive audiences. But pretty quiet weekend. The weather was beautiful on Saturday and Sunday, so that always sort of keeps people there home tending to their gardens and whatnot. We did see a little spike today. We're recording this on Sunday, and the first heat wave of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of people in the theater right now who are in the theater just to get in the air conditioning.
Right.
You know, because it's too hot.
Including us.
Right. Their wife wants to go for a walk in the park and they're like, honey, let's go see John Wick. They got the air conditioning, get a slushie.
Your heart will be pacing just
right,
like the same.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
Wow.
All right. Let's get into Mr. Wick.
Mr. Wick. I love this movie. Spoilers. I had such a good time with this movie.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I liked it more than the second one. And the action in this movie walks the fine line from becoming like gratuitously boring to gratuitously hilarious. And it's like the fight scenes start off and you're like, oh yeah, this is pretty badass. And then you're like, this has been going on for a while. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, you know, that was like the whole audience was laughing at the certain things.
Like the dogs that go for the crotch every time.
Yeah. Or the when he's fighting those guys with the knives,
yeah,
like pretty early on.
Yeah.
He's just like loading the guys up with like 16 knives. Like they're dead. You don't need to keep. And then, and at the end, like everyone's dead, but this one guy is just leaning against the wall with like three knives in his chest. And he's like, ugh. And you just see down at the end of the hallway, John Wick just slowly walk in, pick up this like heavy axe, and then really laboriously throw it. It just spins down the hallway and hits the guy in the head. And you're just like, what? This is not necessary, but whatever.
You know what I wanted at that moment? I wanted a wink and a nod to Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I wanted John Wick to pull a gun out of his pants and shoot the guy in the head. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. What'd you think?
I loved it and I hated it and loved it.
Whoa. Love, hate, love.
Yeah. It's like torturous because I was a big fan. I am a big fan of John Wick, the franchise. Love all of them. And I agree with you. I like this one even better than the second one. I had my heart set on some closure. I thought John Wick was either going to die or ride off into the sunset, a free man.
Yeah.
And clearly we're going for John Wick 4, which is like, that's why I say I loved the movie and then I hated the ending, but then I loved the ending because now we're getting a John Wick 4.
Yeah.
Like, all right, yeah. You know, more is better.
See, I was kind of there with you, but I think I liked the ending and the fact that just like, oh, this is going to go on forever.
Yeah.
Like, you will never know when this is truly the end of the movie. The only one that felt that like it had an ending was the first one. And now it's I just like with the last time, it's like a question or a statement's made and you're just like, let's move, like time to keep going.
You know what this movie reminded me of? The ending reminded me of the Bourne franchise. Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum, all that kind of stuff. Like
only good.
Only good. We'll have to come back to that because I'm a fan. I like Jason Bourne. But yeah, I think that in a way, like, obviously Jason or John Wick is not dead.
No, right? No, no.
Yeah. So.
Although realistically, I mean.
Scott, let me stop you right there. I don't want you to talk about John Wick and use the word realistically.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Fair enough.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just...
Which leads me into my don't get me wrong. Don't start whatever. But let me contradict myself. My pet peeve in the movies is when 17 bad guys are shooting at the good guy, not one of them can land a bullet. The good guy does like a tuck and roll and fires 6 bullets to kill 17 guys. And I was thinking, when I was watching John Wick, I was thinking, you know, Penn, maybe you're missing something. Maybe bad guys are bad guys because they never had the discipline to learn how to shoot right.
Oh. And all of a sudden...
And now John Wick, who obviously has...
pull off their helmet.
Right.
And they're like, you're right.
You're right. So you have that same problem with Star Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I had that thought during John Wick. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought there was a couple, like, sort of funny moments when the girl... When Halle Berry was like, he shot my dog. And John Wick was like, I get it.
Yeah. That was the moment where I was like, is this going to be a movie I don't want to watch again? Because I thought they really shot the dog. I was like, I don't know if I can handle that. I don't like dogs getting hurt.
Yeah.
But it was fine.
It was all good.
Yeah. And what was I just thinking about? The along those lines of, well, I like that we got to see like more of where John Wick came from, the Russian guys and that kind of stuff. I did feel like every character, for being a part of this organizational hierarchy, went against it really easy.
Right from the opening get-go when the doctor gives him a, you know, stitches him up.
Right. I mean, the doctor was a little bit more understanding because he's quote-unquote a doctor.
Right.
And but then everyone else is like, well, I know that you have this overarching oath that all the other oaths fall under, but you made this oath to me.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, crap, you're right.
Somewhere there's a sociology professor who is going to show this movie to his class. Like, what was the submarine movie, Red?
Hunt for Red October.
Hunt for Red October. That's what they showed me in college when they were like, you know, which order do you, you know, do you stay faithful to your, you know, you took an oath to follow orders, or do you, you know, refuse the orders if there's a, you know, ethical, moral reason not to?
Right.
Know? And which, you know, how do you sort of handle those? And that's the same thing with this. This is just a more fun movie.
Right. And not, and they didn't kill everyone who went against it. I mean, they punished them.
Right.
Like, the lady got stabbed through the hands. The other guy got 7 cuts.
That was so...
Yeah. I thought he was dead, but that was pretty cool he wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of things about this movie are just really, really great. It's hard to really get into.
What I liked about this movie, I mean, another part of this that I thought was cool was when he was talking to the guy who shot the dog.
Yeah.
And he was like, you walk through the desert till you're dead, till you think you're dead, and then you keep walking.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. And I would have liked to have seen a little bit more what John Wick was in. Like, I thought it would have been cool for him to have some visions before he passed out. Like, they just showed him, like, Good, Bad, the Ugly style, like, collapse in the sand and roll down the hill, you know.
Yeah.
And I all but expected him to roll into a stagecoach full of stolen, you know, Confederate gold coins. And it would have been kind of neat. I feel like they missed an opportunity to sort of have him have some sort of vision quest type of thing.
Yeah. I loved seeing the Game of Thrones actors in this. Bronn was the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who did the, said walk to you, to fall over. And then the guy that he found at the end of that was the prince from Dorne.
Hmm.
That got killed by the mountain.
I wouldn't have made that connection, but yeah, now that you say it.
And I thought both of them are good actors. It's cool to see them in doing things.
Yeah.
You know.
Not like that stupid Bill Murray.
Where is the Murray?
Just sitting around being famous.
I know. Come on. Jeez.
We get it. You're awesome. Do something with your life.
God, come on. Pull a John Lithgow already. yeah, I had something else I wanted to say about this. I can't really remember. It just, overall, the movie... I think I saw it with the right audience. Like, people were laughing.
Yeah.
They weren't like, it wasn't just totally quiet. It was good. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to watch it again. I want to see it again. I'd almost want to rewatch the trilogy.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking was I wanted to, it made me want to rewatch.
Yeah.
Well, the first one, because I feel like for some reason, maybe it's just on TV more, but I feel like I've seen John Wick 2 a few times.
Okay.
I think it's been a long time since I saw it. Since I saw the first one.
Yeah. I've only seen the second one once, but I've only seen the first one twice, second one once, and only really within since we started the podcast. So,
yeah. All right. That's John Wick.
All right. Let's move on to some listener notes.
Thank God. Thank goodness. For our listeners.
Oh, my goodness.
We would be lost without you.
Yeah. So I'm going to look up Joel's. Because I can't remember what he said, but you go ahead and talk about Mr. Mystery Gobble.
We'll start with the Mystery Gobble.
The Mystery Gobble.
The name has evolved so that nobody will ever unmask the identity of the Mystery Gobble.
The Mystery Gobble.
The Mystery Gobble identified himself as a single, solitary person who A, listens to the Penn Cinema podcast, and B, has not seen The Avengers.
Who does he think he is? Oh, he's probably been hanging out with Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. The Mystery Gobble would love to be hanging out with Bill Murray. Those guys would get along great.
I don't doubt that.
Two peas in a pod right there.
Yeah. So, Joel Cornett wrote us in again. And he said, not much to say about Detective Pikachu. But he got into... the difference between Captain Marvel and Superman and kind of how we were saying that they seem overpowered last time. What are they going to do with their characters?
OP, I think, was the phrase.
OP, yeah. That's what the kids are using these days.
Yeah.
And we're down.
Yeah.
Is Batman too young or too old again? yeah. But he had some really cool things to say about how in order to make these characters interesting going forward, they, with either one of them, they have to make a compelling story of like emotional conflicted problems and how they still have a chance to do that with Captain Marvel, where with the Superman movies that we've seen recently, like just killing Zod and knocking over buildings and stuff, like the blatant disregard for people kind of lessens his humanity and the way that we can relate to him.
So did Joel like my idea of the Captain Marvel dating show?
I think he told me, he asked if he could be, like if you were directing, if he'd be a part of it.
He'd be a screenwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
A scribe.
A scribe. How does one become a scribe on said dating Captain Marvel show?
Oh, wait. What if Captain Marvel was dating Superman? What if the two of them were like, hey, you blown up a universe today? Hey, you want to get a coffee or what? And Superman was like, hey, girl.
Wow.
Genius.
I think this is the new, forget it. This is how they mix DC and Marvel.
This is our third winner of the day.
Of the day.
Yeah.
Well, we also heard from Pirate Dave.
Love this guy.
Yeah. He wrote in and he said, we were wrong about Rian Johnson. He didn't direct the Planet of the Apes movies.
Strike one.
That he actually directed Looper and Brick.
Loopers? The new Bill Murray movie about caddies?
Yeah. He directed that. And Bricks. New movie about Mason workers. I really liked Brick. I think I almost liked it for how pretentious it was. Hmm. Have you ever seen Brick?
No.
When you went to the theater to see Brick, the indie theaters. I went to Midtown up in Harrisburg.
Okay.
They handed you a postcard with a dictionary on it for all the slang in the movie. Like, that's how pretentious the movie was.
It's awful.
Yeah. So I think I liked it for that. Looper, where I thought was okay. But he also, he thought we looked that information up. Man, he does not know how we prepare.
That's great.
But he saw Booksmart. There was a special like pre-screening for Instagram people last week. Did that happen here?
No.
He had to go somewhere.
I was pretty bitter about the whole thing.
Whoa.
I got into it with my guy from the studio.
Whoa.
I almost pulled the bookings. I said to him, I'm out there like a jerk promoting your movie on the podcast to our dozens of listeners. And then you box me out of this screening? And he said, you only had 200 locations in the country.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, somebody was able to pick the Regal in Lancaster when it's the shitty little theater in Lancaster when you could have had the beautiful Penn Cinema Lititz, which I would have gladly not only agreed but promoted and helped. And so I kind of got into it with him because I feel like, you know, I know you don't watch a lot of sports, but you know when you watch sports and the coach is yelling at the ref and you know the ref isn't going to change the call. But it's important for the coach to yell at the ref anyway so that the ref knows that the coach is paying attention, you know, and the ref knows that, like, we're on top of this and you can't just push us around. I got into it with my guy for that exact same reason because I know – I want him to know that when he sneaks an advanced screening to the Regal 10 miles down the street, I'm paying attention. And I also want to put him on notice that it's illegal to only book with the large chains. Like, you got to have some independence. You know, some independently owned movie theaters, which we refer to in the business as independents, you got to have some independence in your release strategy. Yeah. So I let him know, you know, and I called him out. I said, I know it's easier and lazier and whatever. You can call Regal and check the box, you know, but you got to remember the independence and do it right. So I was pretty bitter about those special advanced screenings. I was glad Dave was able to see it. I'm super glad. So Dave's comments were, the movie's great. It's hilarious. It's not only hilarious and fun, but also what I think he said something about it's like very visually satisfying.
It's
obviously really well made. Mm-hmm. A lot of dance sequences. It sounds exactly what I'm hoping for. So it's only because of my enthusiasm for this film that we're still that we're still playing it.
It's last I checked, it's still at 100% on Tomatoes. Yeah. I don't know if that's changed at all, but critically 100%.
Yeah, no, this movie's gonna sneak up on a lot of people. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, speaking of seeing this movie,
what
on Thursday you can come see this movie with Penn and I at the Thursday 7 o'clock opening here in the Lititz Penn Cinema.
Thursday night, yeah. 7 p.m. at the Lititz Penn Cinema with prizes and fun.
Oh, boy.
And you get to hear me and Dave laugh.
Oh, that's the best part.
I think I'm going to even try to talk Amy into coming.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up?
Whoa.
Yeah. So Calm down. Might just be the three of us in there, though, because it's... It hasn't sold a ton of tickets, per se.
Well, I mean, we haven't advertised it yet.
That's true.
So
right. We'll get out there and promote it. Yeah.
But we hope that you guys can come out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun for anyone who shows
up. Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and follow on the Penn Cinema Facebook page. We'll promote that and start getting into some specifics. I think what I'm going to do is give away some of the prized crap.
Oh, cool.
It's laying around the booth.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Like,
yeah.
I saw an old backpack from Lego Ninjago Land.
Oh.
What's up? I know you guys are going crazy for that.
Sold out. Sold out. It's going to be there.
So Thursday night at 7 o'clock. But before I move on from Pirate Dave.
Okay.
So I would like to make a public apology.
Oh.
To my boy.
Yeah.
Because I, on the last week... I couldn't remember if he was OG day one, and he absolutely was. And as soon as he reminded me that he was, I remembered.
Yeah.
He was with us. We had to do the group interviews at Fiorentino's because we had such drama getting this building open that we did not have an occupancy permit when the staff started and we were doing interviews and trainings and stuff before we were allowed to have people in the theater. So our interviews to work here took place either we did one set of interviews at St. James Church, but we did a bunch of interviews at Fiorentino's in their like little banquet room.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so Dave, I got you, buddy. I remember you. my bad.
you claimed there's a wall of Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's a Hall of Fame.
And here's my thing. If this wall
Hall,
which I've not seen, turns out to be a hall of boogers on the walls.
It's not just a wall, David.
It's a hall.
David.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not just a wall.
It's a hall of fame.
Wow.
Talking
Cooperstown, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
It's a secret. Nobody knows where it is except for me.
Oh, my God.
Even once you get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Do I have to be blindfolded to see this thing?
What makes you think you're ever going to see this
thing? Oh, my gosh. The truth comes out.
When we first opened the theater, I was often the manager on duty, and I would always tell these kids that, you know, hey, you do this right, we're going to put you in the Hall of Fame. And the younger kids were always like, where's the Hall of Fame? So that's like, yeah, so it's very super secretive.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
I'm impressed.
Hey, you know, you keep playing your cards right, David. You can get in there. What? Dare to dream, baby.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we've been watching or reading this week. Well, let's get into it. You went to your big shindig with...
Yeah,
you
know, I have news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit me up.
I saw three movies that I'd like to talk about.
Okay.
Two of them I saw at this conference, and one of them I saw on Netflix.
Okay.
Because I was at home in front of my television,
right.
So I watched Netflix, because it's television. And... Just so we're clear.
Okay. Yeah.
And we might as well start with that, since I already stood up on my little soapbox. The irony of what I'm about to say, of course, is brilliant. The film that I watched on my television at home on Netflix was the documentary about Steven Spielberg called Spielberg.
Okay.
Have you seen this?
I haven't. Is it good?
Oh, my God. It's so great. And it basically – I read it – first of all, I was fascinated to learn more about Steven Spielberg. And second of all, the movie plays like pretty much a required reading list – except you're not reading, you're watching. It's like there's all these movies that either I didn't know he was the director or I didn't know he was behind it or I just, for whatever reason, never saw it. You know
right.
what I mean? And I feel like there are a lot of good Steven Spielberg movies that I never saw. And there are also movies like E.T., mm-hmm. which I knew was a Spielberg. And even like, what's the one before E.T., Close Encounters. Close Encounters and E.T. came out when I was a kid. So I saw them through kids' eyes. Watching this documentary, I realized how much more there is to those two movies. Mm-hmm. Really interesting stuff. So I highly recommend this Spielberg documentary. The two features that I saw, one was the Amazon Studios presentation of Late Night, and one was the Sony presentation of Brightburn.
Okay.
Late Night, I think we've made fun of on this podcast.
What?
I know.
On this podcast?
Maybe I have it confused with somebody else. I had really low expectations for this.
Okay.
But I went and saw it mostly out of social pressure. It was really good.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not saying it was great. I'm saying it was really good. The older female audience is going to love – they're going to go crazy for this movie. Emma Thompson is hilarious in it. Mindy Kaling is good as the sort of main character who sort of struggles but doesn't struggle and sort of finds her own strength. And it's fraught with cliches.
Okay.
Fine, whatever. Some jerk critic is going to say it's a cheaper version of Devil Wears Prada. Mm-hmm. But I just take it for what it is. I thought it was a really good, fun movie. Your mom's going to love it. Like, I don't mean you, but like in general, like moms
are going
to love
it. What'd you say about my mom?
Like it's going to go to that audience hardcore and they're going to love it. I saw a bunch of trailers for Amazon that I can't remember, but they were less impressive.
Yeah.
They were kind of like, whatever. Which, you know. Brightburn, I saw... Okay, so first of all, let me talk about Brightburn. Brightburn was great.
Okay.
I loved it.
Okay.
It was amazing.
I was really curious as to what was going to happen here.
Yeah. It's scary as hell.
Oh.
And it is not like, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, so I'm just going to say, however you think this movie's going to wrap up, you're wrong.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I...
Is Brightburn a don't miss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Where, like, Late Night is like, eh.
Yeah, Late Night's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
The neat thing about the Sony presentation was we saw more footage from Spider-Man.
Okay.
Nothing that I'm sure you couldn't find on the internet, but it was neat to see it. And it wasn't a trailer. It was a package.
Okay.
You know, so it was a little bit more expanded, and I thought it was really cool. We saw an expanded couple scenes from Angry Birds 2.
Okay.
Which was really neat because it had like a watermark across it that said in production. And so there were elements of it where it wasn't finished. So it would go from a fully finished exchange between two characters. And then instantly the next frame would be like just hand like drawn out, you know, not colored in or, you know. And I always think it's neat to see those kinds of films sort of in the process of being fleshed out. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. And I apologize. I'll post on our Facebook page. There was another trailer that was pretty cool just for a movie coming out this summer. I forget what it was, but it was really good. So I thought the Sony presentation in general was really, really slick. And Brightburn was great.
Very cool.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, for me, Monday night I headed out to the Fathom event for What We Left Behind, a look back at Deep Space Nine. Let me tell you.
Tell me.
This is probably... one of the best documentaries about a television show I've ever seen. It was done so well and so right. And it's funny because it's not the best documentary I've seen.
Okay.
It's the best one about a television show that I've seen. And I think it was the showrunner of Deep Space Nine was the guy who put it together. Like, it was one of the guys who put it together. So he had like an intricate knowledge of the show.
Yeah.
He didn't just hit on like the big things and so during the credits, there was more talking, and he was like, you know, we could have talked about this big thing and this big thing, like all the heavy hitters. He's like, but everyone knows about all that stuff.
Ah, yeah.
So like, we could talk about that stuff for days, but like, why would we spend our time talking about that? We could talk about things, other things. And there were two big things that hit home for me. One, he said, when I set out to make this documentary, I wanted to make it for the actors, to show them validation in what they did, because I guess. They didn't feel valid for making the show. It didn't do as well as the other Star Treks, and now that it's out on Netflix, like it's having this big resurgence because it's meant to be watched together. And when it aired on TV, like some channels would miss a week, or they'd change what time it was playing, and people would miss it and not know what was going on.
Yeah.
And he talked about how that was kind of like a self-destructive, like the studio was like, you're self-destructing the show because you're doing serialized show instead of episodic, and he was like, but that's what we are. And so he set out to do this is validation for the actors, and he said in the process of doing it, seeing all the actors come back together and talk and go over this stuff, he realized that they didn't need any validation, that they were their own validation for what they did. And
oh, wow.
And that here, you know, this moment of looking back together is all that it really takes. And then the other thing that he that they did that was really cool is they said, we don't, at the beginning, he said, I don't want this to be just another talking head documentary. So we wanted to do something different. So interspersed within the whole thing, they brought the writers back, the head writers.
Mm.
And they said, what would happen is if now, 25 years later, we decided to write the first episode of season 8. And then you just sit in the room and like go through the process of them imagining the story, how the story wow. would progress. And that was just really cool. And then, of course, like they finished the episode and they're like, all right, to be continued. We would have had 23 more episodes. The rest is your imagination. But like, wasn't that fun? Well, we just did in one day. And, so that was a really interesting thing.
Wow.
Thing to do. So, and then after it, because it was a Fathom thing, they had something after the credits that was like about how they, the process of upscaling, and how you would think when someone's like, oh, I want to make this HD, they just be handed like the episode. But they had to say, okay, this is the scene we want on the script. And then they went to CBS, and CBS is like, okay, here is the whole reel from that day. And like, they had to like recut it and everything. But that's the only way that it could have been done.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So pretty impressive. So that's what I watched this week. And then I started reading this weekend a graphic novel series called Paper Girls by Brian K. Vaughan, who is absolutely amazing. He writes Saga. He writes Why the Last Man, which they might be making into a movie or TV show. And this, I haven't gotten too far into it, but it seems crazy. I think it's based in the late 80s. These bunch of paper girls are on their route, and these guys steal something from them, and they chase them into this basement of this house. And they get teleported into either like the future, because they find an Apple product. So I'm not sure if it's the future or another dimension or what, but they get teleported. And all I know from like the covers is there's giant robots and flying blimps, and somehow this all comes around, and I'm excited. So there you go. That's
sick.
What I got. So this week we're going to be talking about Booksmart.
Can't wait.
Because everyone's going to be watching it with everyone.
Everyone.
Is going to be watching it with us. So, get ready.
Both of our listeners.
so many. All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, many ways you can do that. Best way, podcast@penncinema.com. Probably the first time we said that this episode. That's crazy.
I think we said it once before. I can't remember why, but I did.
I think it's kind of fun that we say it all the time.
Yeah.
podcast@penncinema.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us at thepenncinemapodcast.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Please reach out. Let us know what you think of current movies, what you think of us, my hair, whatever. I'm open
hey
to you.
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. So once again, for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum. Take care and party on.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.